Hello, reader. I'm Alex.
I'm Kelly.
And this is
the Litjoy Podcast.
Today's episode is brought to you by our Sarah J. Maas collection. Sarah J. Maas is the author of Throne of Glass, A Court of Thorns and Roses, and the Crescent City series. You may have heard of some of those series. The variety of items in our shop for Sarah J. Maas is kind of a lot. We've been working with Sarah for several years on licensed merchandise. So right now we have a few collectible keys, a mug, a bowl set, which is really clever. Mm. Both of our bowl sets that we've done with her have been very clever. We have artwork that you can buy as a print. Of course, enamel pins for you pin collectors. There's some jewelry items and a whole bunch more. We're always putting out some new fun Sarah things. So head to litjoycrate.com and shop all Sarah J. Maas.
All right. I'm excited. Today's episode is one that has been, I don't know if it's been requested, but it is something that I feel like I'm seeing every single day.
Yep.
And so it came top of mind, which is Sarah J. Maas. She is taking over the world.
It's true. So I think like a little preamble, a preface, if you will, is helpful. First of all, I feel like there comes a point when an author rises to a high enough stardom that they become polarizing. Mm-hmm. I feel like Sarah, in many ways, because people love her so deeply, her writing so deeply, people also like passionately oppose it. And so I think there's this interesting dynamic with her that you start to see with authors when they become more influential, that they have haters and like huge lovers that like come out of the woodwork and are like obsessed, positive or negative, with the author and with their work. So this episode is created in the spirit of Sarah J. Maas has inspired millions of people to pick up books again.
Yeah.
And I think that that's something that cannot be denied, is that millions of people who don't consider themselves to be readers, and certainly not fantasy readers, are now reading more and more fantasy novels because her books, probably ACOTAR, were a gateway into reading more fiction.
Exactly.
And so I think that it's an important dialogue, which is why we're kind of doing a little bit of clickbait here, where we throw Sarah J. Maas's name in the title.
Yeah.
And then we get more people to listen to the podcast to read more fantasy novels.
Absolutely. And to summarize, it's we want to celebrate the author who helps inspire more readers.
Yeah.
And so our episode is going to be based on basically 10 books that we're going to recommend that you would enjoy reading if you love reading Sarah's other series.
Yes.
And we're going to kind of break them down by, you know, if you like epic fantasy, more Throne of Glass style, versus if you prefer a little bit more of the deep, spicy romance and fantasy from ACOTAR or A Court of Thorns and Roses. We have recommendations more based on that as well. So
yeah, for sure. I would say both of them have major epic fantasy themes, but Throne of Glass is like welcome to all 8 books, and the romance happens, but it is adjacent to this strong plot, this like kingdom Cinderella story plot. Whereas ACOTAR, I feel like romanticy is a little bit more on the forefront, and it's definitely more adult in content.
And it's like happening, like romance is in every one of the books for A Court of Thorns and Roses, whereas Throne of Glass, it's more of the patience game, and then it delivers, you know, but it's like book 4.
Yeah, he does. But no, it's not book 4. It's actually book 6.
It's like book 4 is when it's even introduced, like the idea. And then from there, it's like,
4, 5, 6. Yes.
You're all
6s are. 6. Yeah. I personally enjoyed Throne of Glass more than ACOTAR. Mm-hmm. And so that will probably come out in the episode. Let's talk a little bit, though, about Sarah herself and kind of this phenomenon. We started reading Sarah when she was just barely picking up any traction. She came to Utah. And we went to a book signing. She signed all of her books. Mm. It was kind of right around, I think the book that had just come out was maybe, it was probably Queen of Shadows, or maybe right after Queen of Shadows. Mm. It might have been Empire of Storms.
I went to visit Sarah up at our local bookstore, the King's English, with a different friend. I had literally never heard of her.
You went for like her Throne of Glass tour.
It was like book three or four in Throne of Glass. Okay. And there was still a line out the door. Like there was a small cult following. And I was like, I haven't even heard of this Sarah J. Maas person. And I went with a friend who was so excited. She had a friend that came out of town to come here to see her. And I was like, well, all right, I'll check it out. And there was a 3-hour wait to get a book signed by her. And at the time, well, that's a long wait for someone I had never heard of. So I was like, what's going on with this?
Yeah.
And she had just released the first book, if I remember, A Court of Thorns and Roses.
Okay. So she had a few of Throne of Glass out, and ACOTAR was just hidden.
Yes.
And ACOTAR was just like, so good.
So let's, for those of you who may not have heard of Sarah J. Maas yet, let's introduce her. You're welcome and welcome. And let's talk through why she's such a phenomenon.
Yeah.
Because there, what's it called? A mastum? Or there's like a name, like a nickname for her avid fans.
Oh, I don't actually know.
It's a whole thing.
Well, I mean, yes.
I think that's it. It's like the mastum fandom, which I'm all, it doesn't roll off the tongue. I'll be honest.
There's so many other
but
ones.
But it's clever, so.
I like Weapons of Mass Destruction was a funny one. Mass is a funny last name to like work with. Okay, so she's now for sure a household name in the fantasy, romance, and romantasy genres. She has published 16 books across 3 different series so far. Mm-hmm. So we haven't talked about Crescent City, but that's more like a Zootopia meets Miami Vice.
It's more of a contemporary.
But it's not because it's Zootopia.
Fantasy, romantasy. But it's not. It's Zootopia.
It's Zootopia. But with like sexy species instead of rabbits. So.
Oh, jeez.
Literally, how else would you describe it? It takes place in a fantasy world that's a lot like Miami. And
they're like creatures.
Yeah. And it's kind of like there's trains that are big enough for people with wings and trains for goblins. Literally, I don't know how else to describe. It's like she's like, what are 47 different species? Put them in Miami. That's the book.
Okay. Sold.
I was like, I'm unapologetic in that description.
Gosh. No, it's a quick elevator pitch for that book, but it is her like largest series in the like page count per book.
They're chunky.
They're
It's because she's having to describe so many species.
So guys,
they're entertaining, all of them.
I feel like until that series is pretty wrapped up, I didn't want to focus on recommendations for that one yet. Because book 3 just came out in Crescent City, but it's been announced there will be at least a 4th.
Yeah.
So
called it.
We called it. We were like, there's called no way.
It. It's true. So she is a New York Times bestselling author, OVS, and she sold over 28 million copies of her books.
Wow. Yep.
She's published them. They've been published in 38 languages. Mm-hmm. And she's won dozens of Goodreads Choice Awards in 2020, 2021, and 2022. She also every year wins our March Madness bracket.
I know. This is the first year I didn't realize she's not in it.
Yeah. So this is the first time where someone else has a chance. I know. But it's interesting. Our team is pretty divided. And when we fill out internally the March Madness brackets, this is an Instagram thing we do. So if you want to do it, it's so much fun.
Yes.
It's happening probably when this episode comes out or already did. Sorry if you missed it. Mark your calendar for March. But it's super fun because we all compete internally to see who's going to win the book of the year from the voting, the fan voting. Sarah's fans just, they're avid. They come
out. We vote internally and then our customers all vote and help the brackets. And it's a fun thing to try. And yeah, it's incredible. Like, so this is just like her little rap list here. No big deal of how she's gotten so famous and why, and all of the numbers behind her. I mean, she's a millionaire based, I know it was like pretty high, like her number, because it was online, about how much she's making off of these books and the royalties.
Oh, yes.
And nobody's even really touched the film rights yet. We know Hulu has mentioned that they are putting together an adaptation, but I'm like, I will believe it when I see it.
Yes. So apparently ACOTAR has been optioned for a film on Hulu. Mm-hmm. So we know that.
Yeah.
And when it comes out, we will don ourselves in Fey warrior garb.
We'll make it a whole thing.
We will. We'll make it a thing because, you know, we're pretty extra. We're
fine.
A blast.
I'm almost fine.
You're a freaking delight. Okay, so let's talk a little bit. She pretty much invented
new adult. It was, I don't know if she meant to, but I just love how prolific ACOTAR was, because it took Throne of Glass fans who matured and didn't want young adult content, wanted something that was more adult. And so she created a new adult genre. Well, the publishing houses, I think, did, because they didn't know how to categorize it. It was, it had the steamy sex scenes that you would see in a romance novel, but expertly integrated into a fantasy book.
Yeah.
And romanticy is not really a new thing, but to the masses,
yeah,
it's new.
Yeah.
It is something that hits different than the different genres before. And here's the thing. I think a lot of authors, when they go to their editor, and if it's too spicy, the editor says, what is this? This doesn't fit in fantasy young adult. Is this fantasy adult? Fantasy adult looks a lot more like Tolkien and epic fantasies, and that's not sexy at all. And so there's like, there, I think the authors are kind of crammed. Sometimes they have to edit and modify their books to fit into these existing categories that publishing houses are comfortable with, because the agent and the editor want to sell the book.
Yeah.
And so I think Sarah is just, she really was able to, reminds me of Taylor Swift. She's able to kind of just be like, alternatively, I don't need a category to describe what I do. I'm just going to do the thing that I'm good at. Mm-hmm. And it paid off in a huge way.
Yeah.
It totally opened up the genre to more titles.
I absolutely agree. And I think that it's sort of another one of those cases where we started, you know, 20 years ago, 15 years ago, whatever it is, with a lot of authors just broaching it a little bit, with all this fantasy was coming out, but there was romance elements through them.
Yes,
you know,
for
like
sure.
The Twilight and Hunger Games and all of those books that we kind of started with and got really into reading with. And now we're more mature. And so Sarah like tapped into it and was all next level.
Yeah, she's a romance reader. So I think she was like, this could be spicy.
Yeah. And so she was one of the first authors to really, like you mentioned, bridge that together to literally create this romanticy genre, which is fantasy and romance combined. And A Fourth Wing is on the tails of this.
Oh, you know, for sure.
It is very much like another worldwide phenomenon. And clearly, the audience is there for it.
Yes.
And we've matured from where we started. And now the writing is maturing with us. And I think we're all 100% here for it.
We're like, we're in. Here's the interesting thing about it too, though.
Yeah.
Rebecca Yarros is a fantasy, or is a romance author who's writing fantasy. And Sarah is a fantasy author who is incorporating romance. And I think it just goes to show that people are more dynamic than these genres.
Yeah.
That readers and writers are, they can be a fantasy writer, but that doesn't mean that that's a full description of their capabilities or their genius. And so I do love these mashup genres, because I think that readers are dynamic and they love these stories.
Yeah.
And it comes down to a story. And so, I don't know, I'm a little bit like disestablishment.
Oh, I was like,
I'm a little bit like down with the publishers, but not really. It's more like I love that there's more opening up in this kind of fiction area. So
I was just thinking, that's the not the excuse, but that's what the reason I'll give my husband when he's wondering about all these romance books. I'm a dynamic person.
I'm a dynamic reader.
Dynamic reading choices. Don't judge me. Totally kidding.
I just don't even. I'm like, if someone is like, why are you reading that? I'm all, well,
you should.
So I'm not talking to you. I'm
don't ask. I'm literally reading. Stop.
Well, it's true. Which is, wow, what a beautiful and elegant segue into what we're going to talk about.
Well, it was on the tails of that, I wanted to read some of these stats, which I thought were so fascinating, that romance in general is booming in whatever genre it's in, basically, whether it's on its own or in a mashup. And was there something you wanted to say?
Nope.
Oh, okay. So according to Publishers Weekly, sales of romance titles grew by 52.4% just from 2001 to 2002. 52%.
Boom.
And then the outlets also reported that romance books grew faster than any other genre in the first half of 2023. And I think they stopped reporting at that point, but I guarantee they just continued to grow.
Yep.
Last year, it was everywhere. Book Talk, all the books coming out, like romance was a massive theme in a movement.
Massive. Sarah J. Massive.
In addition, 82% of romance readers are women, shock, according to the Romance Writers of America. So that's what we're asking for. We're asking for more romance in whatever genre.
Yeah.
Maybe not Lord of the Rings, but it could work.
I don't know. I'm almost done with the Fellowship and I'm all, it could have used something.
You know,
we don't have to.
I'm on my third song listening to the book. We're listening to my book club right now.
There is at least 10 songs in that first book.
Just when you made the comment earlier about like, this is epic fantasy. It's like Lord of the Rings. There's not, you know, romance in it. And I'm all, it might have needed some in the first book.
It's so hard. I'm like, Tolkien. Sorry, Lord, we don't need to go there.
Okay.
But we will. Eventually we'll go into Lord of the Rings because it felt like it was a book written for like 12-year-old boys. It was just like where everything in their world is like dudes.
An adventure.
Dudes on an adventure. So many bros. It's all right. We can get into it in a minute.
We'll pivot. I know. Alex and I are currently undergoing the, I won't say the task, but we are undergoing the privilege of getting to read through the Lord of the Rings trilogy for the first time. Weirdly, haven't done it.
We need to. I mean, we have each read several of the books, just never all of them together at once. And so we're like, this is important for posterity.
So
it's important
to be continued on that front. But back to Sarah.
Okay. We're going to talk about now.
Okay.
Epic fantasy recommendations similar to Throne of Glass. So I would say just fans of Sarah J. Maas in general would enjoy all 10 recommendations.
Correct.
But we're going to break it down for Throne of Glass and ACOTAR, as Kelly mentioned. So starting with Throne of Glass, Throne of Glass is a young adult epic fantasy series. There are 8 titles, 6 main titles, and then 2 I would say supporting titles.
Yeah.
So there's The Assassin's Blade, which is a collection of 4 novellas, Throne of Glass, Crown of Midnight, Heir of Fire, Queen of Shadows, Empire of Storms.
What's the kingdom?
Kingdom of Ash.
We see that one.
But Tower of Dawn and the Kingdom of Ash.
Yeah, yeah.
I just deserve a medal. I just want to say, like, 10 stars for Alex.
Good job.
And you are making a commitment, but the world building is so good.
It's really good.
I loved this series. It's my favorite fantasy series of all time, just because I was totally in it.
Yeah.
I was part of the journey, the culture, the revolution. Viva la revolution. It was just epic. All around epic. The magical powers. Someone has Elsa powers in it. It's just fucking awesome.
I think it's also extra potent when you are waiting for each book to drop.
Yes, that's true. Know,
especially when it's an epic fantasy like that. So I feel like everyone who's dealing with like the Fourth Wing thing going on right now, because that will be a 5-book series and we're only on book 2. So I think we're going to see a ripple effect from this in a sense, you know, 5-10 years from now as well.
Yes, that's a good point. When you wait for books to come out one in a series, it's like such an anticipation thing. So it might build the hype around the books a little bit more. And that's definitely how Throne of Glass was for me.
The anticipation, you know?
Rowan is also just like my ultimate, end all be all for male protagonist.
I always just imagine him like 8 feet tall. Why is
he? Is.
He's very tall, but.
He's very tall. There's that one fan art that I sent you that I was like, this should be memorialized. It was special.
Hi, Bo. We can't link to that in the notes, but just have
no. I'm sure it was
I'm just teasing.
AI generated and totally conflicting.
We just both had a moment where we're like,
We're like, let's just sit. Anyways, okay, we're already too far into this episode without getting to a single title.
I know.
Number one recommendation: An Ember in the Ashes series by Saba Tahir. Mm. First of all, Saba's just a badass. Like in general, like her books always solid. She's just an excellent human, and I feel like has a way of writing characters who have real strife.
Absolutely. And this was recommended a lot, you know, just like researching and trying to find the common themes of books that came up. And this one came up a lot. And I've read it. It's a beautiful series. It's an important series. And I really like her writing style. And basically, the comparison is if you want something with high stakes, unique settings, complex characters. You know, this has got a really intense, in a good way, fantasy world that's been created, dystopian.
Yes.
you know, and there's an emperor that needs to be overthrown, and it's a really strong female lead again. Like a lot of those themes are crossovers right there.
Yes.
And then should we give a little synopsis?
Yeah. So the Martial Empire, nobody is safe or in control of their fate. And the main character, Laya, I can't remember the audiobook. I always pronounced it Laya, but I think the audiobook might say a little differently. She is a slave who lives with her grandparents and older brother. When her brother is arrested for treason, she decides to spy for the resistance in exchange for her brother's freedom. Mm-hmm. After she enrolls in a prestigious military academy, she meets Elias, one of the top soldiers in training, who secretly opposes the empire. As their interests bring them together, they come closer to either overthrowing the empire or dying by its hand.
Epic.
It has so many great things that, so I love the like secret spy, not clear what side you're on. Mm-hmm. Definitely get that with Selena Sardothian in Throne of Glass. Yep. You get it here too. Also like this slavery theme, enslavement definitely comes up in both series. And then I do love the prestigious military academy kind of element. I feel like that is such a lovely theme throughout many fantasy novels of this idea of kind of being almost like a stormtrooper.
Yeah.
And then kind of that rebelling.
Yeah.
Right. And so one thing I loved about Saba's series is at the specific military camp setting is just very compelling. It's like cliff edge, middle of the desert. So that like the idea of escape is.
Yeah. And she does such a good job building like the tension that's felt throughout the series with, you know, nobody feels safe.
Yes.
And you can kind of just feel that general tension throughout. And I'm like, I don't want to say anything to give spoilers away, but basically lots of crossover in the feel, the vibe, some similar themes as Throne of Glass. And this is a great one to check out. If you love reading about people looking for justice. And finding that they can be an agent of change.
Yeah. Also, definitely young adult in its romance. And so,
yes,
it is in the young adult genre. I will say in Throne of Glass, you get to book 6 and all of a sudden it becomes new adult. There's like sexual content. Yeah. And so that was controversial. This one throughout and Ember in the Ashes throughout, I feel like the sexy scenes are.
They're
lovely.
Yeah, they're sweet. And I tried to choose books that were mostly in the young adult category, except the last one, just like in the actual series.
Yes.
Right at the very end, we get a little spice.
Kapow. But An Ember in the Ashes, I would recommend for 16 and up for the
great
content. All right. Number 2, The Cruel Prince, which is number 1 in the Folk of the Air series by Holly Black.
Love Holly.
I'm like, we have a bunch of Holly product, I believe. Yeah. We have some Holly product in our shop. And I believe some coming as well.
We did the most beautiful special edition of this set.
It sold out so fast.
Sold out twice really fast. And who knows? I don't know if we'll ever do it again. But we do have a few products. I think you're right. One of our favorite collections because it's all woodland theme. And I'm
100%.
We love it so much. The golden acorn. I know. And anyways, okay. We're teasing them. They're like, why talk about things we can't get?
I know. I'm sorry. Okay. So like the Cruel Prince synopsis.
Yeah.
When Jude was 7 years old, her parents were murdered.
Oh, no.
And she was taken to live in the high court of the fairies with her 2 sisters. Now, 10 years later, Jude is living as a human among fairies and trying to find her place in the court. So in these books, the real world exists, like as we know it, Earth, human world exists. Yeah. And there's also this other realm, the realm of fairies, which feels like it has kind of Cassandra Clare crossover. Like they both have like a world of fairies. But I mean, Holly's so into Fae that she like is Fae.
Yeah.
Like she like had her ears surgically shaped to look Fae.
Yeah, she did.
She's
committed.
So awesome.
I will.
I'm like, she's so badass. And so the whole book is fascinating because fairies are kind of known in this, in fairy folklore, they have like this cruel edge to them.
Yeah.
And
they can't lie. So they get real close to it by bending the truth.
Right.
And playing with their wording. And being very manipulative.
For sure. I would say manipulative is the perfect way to describe it. And, you know, Jude as a human has to navigate that as a, you know, child growing up in the world of Fae, of fairies. And Cardan, who is the cruel prince himself.
Yes.
He is such an interesting and I would say attractive and repulsive love interest. Yeah.
You definitely love and hate him.
Yes.
Multiple times throughout the series. And I know this one is based on Fae, which is closer to like ACOTAR, but everything else about it speaks more to Throne of Glass. This is kind of how I felt in regards to some plot lines and common themes.
The Fae exist in Sarah's books as in Throne of Glass as well.
That's true. That's
like true. Rowan is Fae, half Fae. No, he's full Fae. Rowan is full Fae.
He's all Fae.
No, but it's
all day. we love the Fae.
Fae. Anyways, I don't know where we're at.
Well, just Fae, or in a lot of books in general.
It's true. And they're like, it's weird because fairy lore is like these mischievous creatures who sometimes make life a little bit more difficult for people. Whereas like the trend in literature, and I don't know where this came from, is for them to be like 6 feet tall Viking sex gods.
Yes.
I'm like,
that's a requirement.
They all just like came out Hemsworths, like across the board.
Oh man.
And so it is a little bit like, wait, like where did this come from? But I'm like, none of us are mad about it.
I think that's the recipe, right?
We're all like, okay, we're in. So yeah, I mean, I will say in Cruel Prince and Hollies, it's probably more of a hearkening to fairy folklore than you might find in Sarah's. But I will say the Cardin is like not ugly. So there's that.
We just have so many book recommendations based on how hot the protagonist is.
They're like, do you want to read the book or not?
Clearly, we have our priorities.
We've got them down. I'll talk about other favorite things from the series. One, I thought that Holly described setting of these fairy parties, like the descriptions of these opulent parties. They were just delicious.
Mm-hmm.
Like the food and the smells and the dancing and the revelry. Very, very fun to read.
Super magical, borderlining, don't know what's real and what's not.
Yes, a little bit of like blurring the lines.
Uh-huh.
Also has a dark fairy tale theme to it.
Yeah.
It feels fairy tale-esque.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say that Jude and Cardin were two characters that I was able to read from their perspective and they didn't annoy me, which is hard in young adult.
I literally was like, oh, gasp. It's always so nice.
Guests in Spanish.
When there's characters that are so intriguing and entertaining and you don't get annoyed. Because I feel like that's true. There's always like one of the main characters. It's fine. I'll grit through it.
It's true. Actually, that's part of why I prefer Aelin over Feyre. Because Feyre is written in first person. And I'm just like, if I have to hear her go down one more trauma spiral. Whereas Aelin is written in third person. Yeah. Throne of Glass is written in third person. Personal preference.
Yeah, I get that.
Because I'm like, I don't need to know every thought that they have. That's just me.
That's a good point, though.
Let's me
keep that in mind. So Cruel Prince has lots of common, you know, angst. There's a lot of political drama. There's going to be backstabbing and betrayal
dun,
and
dun, dun.
All those good things that you find in Throne of Glass. So it's a delightful romp through fantasy and Fae land. And is that the sound?
I don't know. It's a romp sound.
we'll just move forward. So our third recommendation.
Yes.
Is Cinder, which is number one in the Lunar Chronicles series. Recommend the whole series.
Yeah.
Now, and this is by Marissa Meyer.
It's a little bit of an older young adult series. Yes.
And this one is more sci-fi and fantasy. It's kind of both.
It is a sci-fi fantasy.
But it is a retelling.
It also takes place on Earth and it's Lunar Chronicles, also the moon.
And you can tell by the cover from the first book, it's like a total play on Cinderella.
It's so awesome. Okay, so I loved this series. I would highly recommend the series to anyone who loves young adult fantasy or is interested.
Great. It's really unique.
Very unique. It is a Cinderella retelling, very quite literally. It's in the future on Earth. And I believe it starts in
New Beijing.
Yeah, in New Beijing. And she has an animatronic foot. The main character, because she needs it obviously to function. There's a whole backstory there.
Well, she is a cyborg. Like
She's, yes. Yeah. Cinder.
Well, yes. I mean, but very human emotions, yes. Very human character, but cyborg elements, yeah. For mm-hmm. sure. That's like the premise of her whole story. And she, you know, has an evil stepmother, stepsisters, mm-hmm. And somehow she is linked to the Lunar Queen, yes. Who is evil. Mm-hmm. She's the villain. And there's a series of other stories that come of this, all of them yeah. together to like, how do we defeat this evil overlord? One of them is Scarlet, which is Little Red Riding Hood. Mm. There's also a
Cress,
which is a Rapunzel retelling.
Yes.
We also have Sleeping Ooh. Beauty.
Okay.
Type retelling in there. I mean, and then all of them have their male counterparts.
Yeah.
Where it's like, there's kind of like a Flynn Rider type character. Yes. There's definitely like a Prince Charming. There's a wolf. Mm-hmm. I think Scarlet your favorite with the wolf? Because that's kind of like a little bit more angsty relationship.
I enjoyed all of them, but I do feel like I might have. Was Cress the third book?
Yes. So Cress was... the one that was so fun about that one is she's not in a tower. She's in like essentially a space station.
Yes.
So like she's stuck, forced to stay in the space station. And then she meets definitely like her counterpart, the Flame Rider guy, is such a Han Solo.
Yeah.
Right? He's totally Han Solo.
Yeah.
Shame on me. that's like totally kind of his vibe.
Yeah.
I don't know. That one, that was my favorite one.
Me too. And what I love is Cinder, like you just mentioned, there's so much crossover Throne of Glass, and I feel like each character has like a counterpart at some point.
Yes,
throughout the series. Sure. And so you're seeing all these matchups happen throughout. Plus it's a gentle retelling. Throne of Glass is, if I remember right, similar.
It's a Cinderella. Retelling. Yeah, whereas Beauty and the Beast is ACOTAR.
Yes, yes.
And then Zootopia is...
Zootopia.
Put that in there. That's important. They need to know.
I would just recommend this regardless, but also if you enjoyed, you know, a YA fantasy with lots of different characters that you know are going to also have some romance, and yes. it's epic world building, and by the end of the series they all come together, right?
Yes,
to be able to kind of overthrow.
It's a real Babysitter's Club situation at the end. The powers combined. Actually, just talking about this makes me want to go back and reread it. Like, I kind of forgot how much I love the Cinder or the Lunar Chronicles.
Yeah, me too.
So I was like, yeah. I know we're doing Heartless. So Litjoy's doing a special edition of Heartless right now. And I think by the time this episode comes out, it'll come out. But anyways, check our shop, Heartless, which is Marissa Meyer's backstory for the Queen of Hearts from Alice in Wonderland.
It's so freaking cool.
It's cool.
It was
She's
a rad
so
backstory.
Good at retelling.
Yeah.
She is. That's not what she's working on right now, though.
Oh, yeah, because we just interviewed her. Mm-hmm. Oh, we'll link to that, too.
Yeah.
But we had an incredible interview with her, and she was telling us about, because she was really focused on fantasy sci-fi in the young adult genre. Then she's kind of moved into the contemporary genre.
Yes.
And now she's working on a murder mystery, if I remember.
Yeah, it's like a murder mystery thriller.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So she's fun. She was a delight to talk to.
Oh, yeah. 100%
but
recommend listening to that episode because she's got good advice in there too, I feel like, for writers and readers.
Yeah.
So anyways, Cinder.
So good. The last thing I was going to mention is like, because I don't want to reveal any of the spoilers from either series, but they have hidden identities, both Cinder and Selena, and that will come out as you read them.
Yes.
And why there's some more crossover there.
I'm just like, Cinder and Selena, such cool names.
Really cool name. All right. Number four.
Number quattro. Shadow and Bone, number one in the Shadow and Bone trilogy by Leigh Bardugo.
Yeah.
I was like, these are awesome.
I know.
The Grishaverse world is just, I feel like Leigh Bardugo does a really beautiful mashup of taking some nostalgic real world settings and turning them into this epic fantasy world.
Yeah.
Like when you are in Ketterdam, you feel completely immersed in this culture of kind of, it's a little bit like Amsterdam.
Like a little Russian Ukraine.
Yeah, definitely like there's like a, that kind of area up where Matthias is from, you know, like the down in Ketterdam feels like a little bit like Amsterdam Monte Carlo, maybe meets like Vegas.
There, yes, Ketterdam.
Yeah, where Kaz Brekker is the king, folks. Also, Kaz Brekker, protagonist, antagonist, like both, just such a compelling, morally gray character.
Yeah.
So I feel like this immersion in setting that you get along with these just like very distinct characters. Mm-hmm. Feels very similar to me. Yeah.
Yeah.
As Sarah. Like those are the things that draw me to Throne of Glass.
Absolutely. Shadow and Bone. So Lee was on a book tour that came through Utah with three other debut authors. This was her debut.
Yes. Book. Which, by the way, just such a well-written book to be your debut book.
No.
Honestly.
She's so talented. And I remember there was the four of them at the panel and I was pregnant. So I know it was 12 years ago and just ready to pop. Like I could barely hug her.
You're like, get in here.
I just remember I have a photo and I bought all four books from all four debut authors. And the only one that I was like, I get it. I feel horrible saying this, but Wesley Bardugo, I was like, that was a strong debut. I was immediately so in love with the book that we did it for my book club. And then we ended up doing the whole series for book club. And, you know, we talked about this. Lee has Skyped in to him and we got to talk with her about each book. So I just have like a deep nostalgic love for this series.
Yeah.
So I was so happy when we got to work with Lee and.
Oh, yes. It's like a
great, like full circle.
Full circle moment. So Shadow and Bone specifically follows Alina, her story, and the story of the Darkling. And then Six of Crows and Crooked Kingdom is a duology also in the Grishaverse that follows Kaz Brekker and his crew. They perform some heists. And the two were kind of mashed together for the fantastic Netflix series. Mm-hmm. The casting was incredible. And they kind of combined all of them into the Grishaverse. And then there is the King of Scars, which is one of the characters after the two series, his story.
They allude to it at the very end of season two of Shadow and Bone.
Which everyone just continue to put out into the universe that season three can someday happen.
You can sign a petition to bring it back.
But I think that that's why I kind of mentioned setting and character, because when you read both series, they're all in the same war. They're all in the same conflict. Mm-hmm. So it's just, there's this beautiful intertwining. The thing that I also feel like has crossover with Sarah on this is the magic, the magical abilities, and then understanding that there are consequences with using magic. And I think a lot of times there's not an expenditure with magic in a lot of books. Are just like, and they have this ability and then there's no cost. But I think that's something they both do well, is kind of talk about the risk and reward of using your magical abilities. And so I love it.
I love that in Lee's books. I just remember enjoying that I could never fully tell who was, you know, quote, good and bad. Who's the actual, you know, antagonist in this story. And that's what I love when she creates these characters, that she shows you that we're all capable of both.
Yeah.
And there's no inherently all bad or all good. And those lines really blur. And she displays that so beautifully in The Darkling specifically. I just adored his backstory.
I know.
Learn more about him. And same with In Throne of Glass, I feel like that is something we're constantly learning about with all the characters, is their potential for both.
Yes.
It's not clear cut like it is in a lot of series.
I will say one thing that I think that Lee does, that's maybe she's a little bit stronger in her writing than you might find in a Sarah J. Maas book, is not every character is like a supermodel. You know, there is like a much more relatable human casting of characters, it feels like, in the sense that you could see yourself more physically in every character, like
better representation,
a little bit more approachable. And it also kind of, not everybody is the chosen one. And in Sarah's books, it does feel kind of like every character is a chosen one character.
Yeah.
It's like everything is prophesied. The truth is it's a delight to read all of Sarah's writing. Mm-hmm. But I will say Lee probably is a little bit more of a realist when it comes to like war and her style, or just like struggle and strife.
Yeah.
And I really appreciated it. I specifically loved in the Shadow and Bone series how there is a cult that forms to worship one of the characters because of her abilities. And I loved that part, to watch the way someone might appear to be an ally, but can actually manipulate and use someone as kind of propaganda.
Yes.
And I think you found that in Hunger Games as well.
I was thinking that same thing with like Katniss. And I mean, I don't know if it's much of a spoiler or not, but we can just leave it as is. But yeah, they create a saint, right?
Agreed.
Around that character. And that theme is across Sarah's books as well, to a degree. I feel like, I'm like, it's so good. And I think we still have editions of Shadow and Bone in our shop.
We might.
We have a few left because those went on sale a few weeks ago. But
yeah, so go check it out. We do have, we're all sold out of the Six of Crows duology, but the Shadow and Bone trilogy is in the shop, and it has a really, really beautiful slipcase with like pop outs and things. So
this is very fun. Interactive slipcase on top of an interactive
experience
book. Yeah.
I mean, so, you know us. We can't not.
We'll see. We'll see. But this airs about a month after we record. And so I'm just like, I hope I didn't.
Hopefully there's still some left, but go check it out because we really wanted to celebrate this beautiful series. Mm-hmm. So, okay. Number 5 on the list of Throne of Glass, The Nevernight Chronicles by Jay Kristoff.
And this is stepping it up again. So we're moving into
this
adult.
Is spicy.
So let's be clear. Jay always posts on his stories when people miscategorize his books and they end up in young adult. And he's always like, please, for the love of God, stop putting my books in young adult.
Okay, here's the confusion. His main protagonist, Mia, not Thermopolis, Grinaldi. No, his main protagonist, Mia, is 16. But literally in the first, 8 pages, she is murdering someone and losing her virginity to someone. And it's like, not clear if it's like all one scene or two. Come to find out, it's two, just spoiler. She's not murdering the person she's sleeping with.
Yes.
But this is a girl who is like scrappy as hell. Mm-hmm. Like the most scrappy character I think I've ever witnessed. Mm. And she is, because of political strife, feels very Roman Empire. Honestly, the whole story feels very Roman Empire. Because her parents, for political reasons, are unable or unalive to look after her, she pretty much is like, I'm gonna survive. And she joins this Academy of Assassins.
Is she recruited? Mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember.
No, Mercurio takes her in. He's a little bit of a political ally, kind of understands what's going on. And he takes her in as a very, very young child, makes sure that she is prepared in her pre-training, like begins her apprenticeship as an assassin. And then she has to journey to find the School of Assassins. It's just so fucking cool.
Even just the journey to get there was so awesome. Exciting.
But yeah, there's like sand krakens and obviously Trick is there and he's like cute until he's hot. And then there's like, in the School of Assassins, it feels very much like what's like a monastery, right?
Yes.
It feels like assassin monks kind of a thing. Only there's like a lot of sex happening.
But it's almost like, imagine almost like the professors from Hogwarts who are all trying to see who actually survives at the end.
Yeah. Like one of the professors just hacks her arm off. There you go. It's not part of the plot, but it's like, it's so intense. So like, yeah.
Yes, not her own arm.
No. Oh, gross.
Yeah,
no.
Sorry.
A male professor who's in, he's the professor of swords.
Yeah.
Right? Like master of swords, I think. To teach her a lesson with her arrogance and fighting. Mm. They have abilities to like help arms go back on. I don't know if it's like her arm gets reattached or if it's like a Deadpool thing.
No.
Like, tiny hand.
Oh my gosh.
It's not. I got to text Jay and ask.
Oh my gosh. I remember, right, they almost have like healers that have gifts. And then I think it just went back together.
But they kind of look like the person from Princess Bride down in the dungeon, like their face is peeling off. Guys.
It's intense.
It's intense and it is awesome.
This is, okay, on paper, when I remember reading about it, I was like, not for me, because like I don't typically feel drawn to really gritty, violent, you know, assassin type books. Like if that's like the whole plot. But we talked about this in our interview with Jay, where I'm like, he walks such a beautiful line of knowing how to balance that intensity with lightheartedness and
very funny,
incredible wit and humor to keep you chuckling throughout it, which is an interesting combo. But like I was laughing through the series multiple times.
Oh, for sure. There's an extensive amount of footnotes in the book that are backstory footnotes that I feel like offer comedic relief at moments where you might need it.
Yeah.
And so I recommend a listen and read at the same time. Mm. And it is epic. I will say it feels like it's as many words as Throne of Glass, honestly. Some of the print is very fine.
So why it's on here, right, is...
I don't need a reason.
I just was like, we're just gushing about it. I was like, wait, what are we doing here? Nevernight is more adult, obviously. It's going to step up similar to the books in Throne of Glass, where as you get further in the series, they're going to go up in maturity.
Spicy.
And spice level. There are assassins who were trained this way. There's that crossover.
Which, if you didn't get it from book one in Throne of Glass, called The Assassin's Blade, spoiler.
Well, that's the, like, 1.25.
No, that's 0.5. So it's...
It's
the main character's backstory.
Mm-hmm.
And, but yeah, a school of assassins is a good way to describe it.
I can't remember where I was going with that. But
I'm sorry. That's my bad.
No. Is there any other themes that stood out to you? I was just trying to...
I think like a strong female protagonist is a theme. And I also feel like if you read Throne of Glass and you're like, I want something that's kicks up the intensity, I think that Jay is a great option.
Yeah. Like I said, it's pretty violent, but at the same time, it didn't deter me. It was very emotional too. Like there are characters that you get very close to, and
of course,
don't
do it. Them all.
Don't get close to them. No,
no. So book one's really the School of Assassins. Book two is Gladiator, essentially, and also like Pirates of the Caribbean-esque.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. Book three feels definitely like overthrowing a Roman Empire. Vibe.
Yeah. You also get this, like the folklore, not like fairy tale. It's not like that. It's definitely more integrated into the society.
Yeah. Folklore is a good one for it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like the moon and the sun.
Yeah.
Suns. There's a reason it's never night and dark dawn. Wait, is that twilight?
I enjoyed it thoroughly. And so for someone who wants more intensity in their fantasy, possibly a little bit next level, like we were saying.
Yes.
Definitely check out Nevernight.
Well, folks, we should have known. We should have known that we couldn't get through Throne of Glass and ACOTAR recommendations. Mm. So lesson learned. We're going to do part two. Books to read if you loved A Court of Thorns and Roses series by Sarah J. Maas. And we're going to wrap up today's episode, Books to Read If You Loved Throne of Glass. Please remember to rate and review us.
And like a good book, recommend us to your friends.